The remarkable thing is that we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for that day. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people will act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the one thing we have, and that is our attitude.
I'm challenging you to make the most of this day. Live it like it could be your last. Don't spend it negative and defeated. Enjoy today.
And no matter how bad things are in your life, there's always something you can be thankful for.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Jeff Thompson.
Yes.
This is Positive Phil. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for being willing to chat with me today. This is should be good fun.
Oh yes, I'm excited because this is my passion. I love interviewing ambitious people, and it seems like looking through your bio that you're very ambitious. Where do you get that motivation from?
Well, I don't know. I think some people are just wired with it a little bit. In medical school, my nickname was epinephrine, so they called me Epi. So in your bunch of highly motivated medical students, they still thought I had a lot of energy. So it just kind of bubbles up. I mean, there's lots of things to do. There's lots of people that to connect with. If you look around, you can find all kinds of outstanding people to partner with. I don't know. I guess I draw a lot of my energy from folks around me.
I love it. I love it. So today on the show, Dr. Jeff Thompson, tell me a little bit about Gunderson Health System, because I Googled it and the Wikipedia came up and it said over 7,000 employees. Is that the right one?
Yes, that is. We have 7,000 employees responsible for several hundred thousand patients across Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa. It's been around for 125 years. I've been here 33 years. I came as a newborn and pediatric intensive care doc. We have about 500 physicians, 300 to 400 PAs and nurse practitioners, a total of 7,500 employees, and spread out over 19 counties that we try and keep people healthy and fix them if they get sick.
Oh, my goodness. My heart is just happy right now. And are you in Wisconsin?
I am Wisconsin. I'm at that. I've been at this organization 33 years, and 14 of it, I was the CEO, and I just stepped down about a year and a half ago as the CEO. But the incoming CEO asked me to stay and help with the transition, with advising him, and with helping connect with the outside community to try and advance this idea of building our communities and having the health systems be an important part of building, not dragging down the community. So that's what I do. And I do, a lot of national work and some international work. So that's my responsibilities now. So not the CEO anymore, but it was outstanding fun while I did it.
I bet it was. You know, I am from Wisconsin. I love the Midwest. I love Wisconsin. I left it, though, in 97, left my mom, my dad, my grandma's still there, and my brother and sister for San Diego. And I was having a conversation with my mom the other day, and she's still scraping snow off her car windows, and she goes into the inner city. She's a nurse at St. Joseph's in Milwaukee, and now I said, Mom, why don't you retire? We can, you can retire. Well, now she's in radiation oncology, and she said, Phil, because I love being by their bedside when no one else is, when
nice.
Their families don't come. That's what I love doing, and my mom is the best in the world.
Well, that's a great story, and the healthcare industry in general gets a lot of press for costs and mistakes and those things. But when you get close to the work, when you really get close to the work, you find people like your mom who do fabulous care. My daughter worked at Gunderson in La Crosse for a while, but missed the inner city population, and now she is working in Milwaukee as well. She is working at for the medical college, working to to try and take care of kids in the less fortunate neighborhoods. And I have a son that's a radiologist that works at today. Will be working at St. Joseph's in Milwaukee.
That is something else. Yeah, growing up, I remember my mom was in the ER and my uncle was an emergency room physician there at the time. And we used to drop her off third shift at night in these and I just, my mom's this little lady, and I just, my heart went out because I spent my time, my career chasing money, and I'm changing that about myself. I'm starting to chase my passion, and my passion is in helping people or interviewing people like you that want to help and make change. So let me ask you this, Dr. Jeff Thompson. You've been a CEO of the successful organization. You have all of these accolades and awards. You could just say this is enough. I'm going to enjoy. But you've put out a book recently, right? You keep going.
Indeed.
That's great. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this book.
Well, the book is called Lead True, Live Your Values, Build Your People, and Inspire Your Community. And I wrote the book because there are many leadership books out there that talk about strategy, and they talk about growth, and they talk about crushing the competition. And what I wanted to do is highlight many of the stories and give leaders or rising leaders a pathway to succeed, but live their values. That it's not about ego and it's not about money. Was Gunderson successful? Oh, we were very successful. We won a zillion awards, as you talked about. Our finances improved, but they were never the goal. The finances were just a tool. They're just a tool to accomplish the goal. The goal was to improve the health and well-being of patients in our community. That was the goal. And if we had a year where we didn't accomplish that, but we made some money, it was a failure. So we didn't ignore our finances. In fact, we did very well. But our goal and our strategic plan was to make care more affordable, not make a lot of money or not be the biggest. And so what I wanted to do is collect stories, not just from Gunderson, but from manufacturing, from education, from a variety of places, stories that real people could relate to. This isn't about $50 billion companies. This is about real people making choices and succeeding and doing very, very well, competing against big competition, and yet living their values and being true to themselves along the way.
You know, I was listening to one of my favorite motivators, Earl Nightingale, back in the days. He has these YouTube videos, and he said, you know, put out your goals. And I'm always thinking my goals are for myself. Make more money, be a better dad, be a better husband, be a better neighbor. That's great. But this part, inspire your community, because he mentioned that. He goes, what are your goals? Do you want to inspire your community? What does that mean, inspire your community?
I think it means to lead by doing and accomplishing things, not by putting up billboards. So we chose to have our fee increase decrease, So every year our fee increase was less than the year before for 15 years in a row. Through the recession, through all those things, we did not take it out on the employers. We went from a high-cost provider to a much lower-cost provider. We developed a program for seniors where 98% of our seniors in the last 2 years of life had their advanced care plans available and followed. So this is living your values to take care of the community. We prove that you can be a healthcare system and decrease your greenhouse gas emissions and save money and improve the local economy all at the same time. We dropped our greenhouse gas emissions 95% in 8 years. And made money doing it. You do things like that, it shows the community that you're caring about the community, that you're worrying about them, and it inspires them to do the same in their own businesses or schools, but it also, they show up to be partners. How can we help? How can we do that? How can we work with you on that? How can we work with our seniors? How can we decrease child abuse and neglect? You know, you took on this big program. How can we help you do that? So it isn't telling the community how to behave. It's behaving in a way that inspires them to act on their own or become your partners. And together, now you move even faster.
Man, I like you. I would love to have a fish fry with you one Friday.
Oh, well, I like fish fries. You are from Wisconsin. Friday fish fries, yeah, that's a big deal. Although I'd be happy to visit you in San Diego. I've been there many times, and I love San Diego, and I never give grief to people that came from the Midwest and settled there. It's a beautiful place with so many different things to do and a lovely cosmopolitan population. San Diego's fabulous.
Yeah, I feel guilty whenever I talk to my mom, which is like every day, and she does not want me to move home because she wants to come out here. Every 3 months she's out here smiling, walking around. It's just a different atmosphere. I like the fact that you said, yes, I'll be on the Positive Phil show. Did you enjoy the process of being an author and now an entrepreneur, of course, pushing the book out?
Yes, I liked writing. I wrote some before. I did a fair amount of speaking. But when I finished, it was part of my responsibility to the organization to codify many of the things we did and try and use that to help other organizations. Not to say here is the way to go, but here is a way, and give people real tools, whether you're an organization of 10 people or 1,000 or 10,000, there are real tools here to say, here's a story, here's what it shows, and here's how you can implement this in your own area. The book is a nice tool to do that. One of the universities is developing a study plan for it that we'll give out. Yeah, I actually am still employed by the organization, and all the funds raised by the book will go to a leadership development fund that will help regional leadership development, help develop these free study guides we're going to give out online, all those kinds of things. So my hope is to help leaders get better. When leaders get better, everybody is better off. And we have a lot to improve. I've been a leader for a long time, and there's a lot of things we need to do to get better. So, you know, your listeners can give one of these books to their boss for Christmas, and maybe that'll help them. But it's about focusing. You know, we spend a lot of time focusing on the well-being of the staff and expecting big things out of the staff. I mean, Gunderson was not an easy place to work. We set very high standards and expected great things out of our staff. But we also, as an organization, committed to do very important things for them. Make sure everyone was treated with respect. Make sure that staff were not the people that took the beating every time we had a little financial downturn. In 2008 and 2009, when everybody got in trouble, some organizations went to firing staff as a very early method. We did not do that. I didn't promise them I would never have a layoff, but I said it's going to be about the last thing we do. And if we start layoffs, we'll start at the senior level because they get paid a lot more. And that actually did not hurt our organization. It helped our organization. The frontline staff knew that we were trying to take care of them, and they worked enormously hard. They worked so hard to try and make the organization work, and our quality went up, our service went up, our finances got better. The staff really demonstrated their tremendous ability to innovate and change because they trusted senior leadership.
Man, you're good. I love this interview. I'm just drawn into listening to you.
Oh, thanks.
Testimonials on the book, the CEO and of GE. This book is an investment in those leaders, the cultures they build, and their ultimate and lasting success. When did you put this book into the market? When did you publish it?
May of this year, April, May of this year, it started to become available. Yes, it was nice of Jeff Immelt from GE to put a foreword in there. He is we've been connected, and in the book there's several examples where General Electric and their system helped improve us. And it's one of the things that I try and teach young leaders, that you need to learn from multiple angles. There are things in business that would help improve healthcare, and help us get better faster. There are things from businesses outside your current realm that you can learn from. And so inculcating those into your practices will help you get better faster. This isn't about crushing the competition. That's not your goal. And actually, that's, except maybe when I'm playing soccer, that's not a very inspirational goal. When you're building a business and trying to take care of community, my concern is not about crushing the competition. It was saying, how can we get so good? We don't have to crush the competition. People just want to come to us. And in fact, that's what's happened. You're back to taking care of the staff. We take care of the staff. The town, the city of La Crosse is only 55,000, so it isn't a giant megapolis. And the county is only 125,000. But every year, we have 25,000 people apply for jobs here. So in a city of 55,000, 25,000 apply for a job.
Wow.
So some are from outside, of course, but we've developed an approach that says not just the people matter, but we behave like that. And it's not just the values matter. We're going to live by the values. We're going to live by the values even when it's not convenient. Sometimes the values look good on the wall or on a billboard, on the website. But when things get tough, finances go down, public scrutiny happens, a mistake gets made, a business might turn and run a different direction. And we just said that's not the way we're going to behave. We make a mistake, we're going to admit our mistake. We're not going to trash the frontline people. We're going to say we'll develop a better system. Now, do we have high standards for quality and service? Oh, absolutely. But if you weren't doing it well, we would try and help you. We had all kinds of courses and all kinds of coaches, all kinds of things. The only time you would be in trouble is if you chose not to come along, if you chose not to treat people with respect, and then you would struggle.
You mentioned earlier, and when I moved here from Wisconsin a while ago, I met this guy on the beach. I was waiting tables, putting myself through school, and he was at the time writing a manuscript, and I didn't know anything about him. But I knew he was a writer and a thought leader. But it was Eckhart Tolle. At the time, I didn't know anything about him. He wrote this book called The Power of Now, and I remember coming home on the bus. It was late after waiting tables for pizza, and I said to him, do you have any advice for me? And he looked at me and said, and I never spoke to him in the past, he said, drop your ego. And you mentioned that on the show earlier. What does that mean exactly, to drop your ego?
Well, note in the back of my book, the publisher collected a bunch of the quotes from the book. And the first one that they pulled out was, no one's ego is more important than the well-being of patients or the staff. It's a way to call out and say, this is not about who's the biggest, who's the brightest, who's the toughest. This is about looking outward. And so it isn't about you. It's about the broader group looking outward and serving the patients, the customers, the community. It's hard. It is not easy, especially in the book. There's a story about a young neurosurgeon who had great outcomes. We had very strong quality standards and service standards, and this young neurosurgeon was doing great. He was here less than a year. His outcomes were good. We're watching. He calls me one morning. He says, Jeff, I think I'm in trouble. I said, what would you be in trouble for? He said, I just hollered at a security guy. Why would you holler at him? Well, I parked the car over by the building, and he was giving me a ticket. I said, where were you parked? He told me, and it was in a fire lane. I said, so you're parked right where the fire trucks have to come through. He said, well, I would have moved my cars. Well, those tickets don't cost you any money. He's just saying, remember to park someplace different next time. I know, but I hollered at him. What'd you say? He said, well, I told him he had a good job that was worth something, and I make more money in a week than he does in months. So then I was kind of quiet, and I said, I didn't say anything. And then he said, so are you going to fire me over something like this? I said, it's up to you. It's up to you. Now here's a big fork in the road, because here's a hard to recruit person. Every organization has those, who is very skilled. We have high flyers that are very skilled in your manufacturing business, your school system. But he was acting way outside the bounds of how we said we were going to act. We have a compact, a code of behavior that everyone gets when they come in, when they're oriented, when they get evaluated, when they get trained. And it says you treat everyone with respect. So I said to him, it all depends on you. If you apologize to the man and write a letter to his supervisor and you commit to not treating people like that, then you have a job here. On the other hand, if you don't, you won't be successful here. He said, I put $5 million on the books every year. He said, you do. And that will be sorely missed. But we cannot. We cannot have you destroying our security people, our nurses, our pharmacists, respiratory therapists, all those people, other clinical staff. You can't do that. You won't be allowed to do that. We'll be happy to help you, but you won't be allowed to do that. Unfortunately, he did not commit to improve and had to leave the organization. This is where living your values is not convenient. Do you think that department was happy? They were not happy. You think those docs were happy taking more call? Believe me, they weren't happy. You think the finances looked good for that department? It did not look good. But you have to decide who's going to take a pounding. All those unhappy people would pound it on me and the other senior executives. They weren't happy, but it was better us take a pounding than having the frontline staff get pushed around for years or decades to come. And we just said, we can't do that. All the data says if you allow behavior like that, you have more mistakes, more problems in the organization. Patients have to come first. The customer has to come first. So we just said, not convenient, but this is how you live your values. So the book has a variety of examples like that where it was not easy, but the outcome for the long term was good. Not easy, but a good long-term outcome.
Man, this is fantastic. You are perfect for the positive film motivators out here.
Well, my reign as a CEO certainly wasn't perfect. I had tons of mistakes, and I point out some of them in the books. I mean, I make all kinds of mistakes, and one of my advantages as a CEO was that my training, and while I was a CEO, I was still an intensive care pediatrician, so I took care of sick babies and sick newborns and sick children, and it really put things in perspective. If somebody came in and said, Jeff, I made this terrible mistake. I tried to do this and it's going to cost us $10,000 because I ordered this and I should have ordered that. And I would say, well, did you learn something? Can you expand that learning? Can you teach somebody else? Oh, yes. Yeah, I'll tell everybody. Okay, good. Then we're all done. We're all done. It's not big. I said, look, you know, I've made mistakes trying to take care of children, sick children. Your $10,000? Yeah, it doesn't even. Then he pales by comparison. So don't worry about it. On we go. Learn and move on. So it prepared me for taking risks that would eventually help the community, that would help our staff, that would really live the mission of the organization. There's another story in there about how to spend our money. I mentioned the environmental program earlier. That was taking some of our savings to do that. We had a company in town that was a high-tech company, and it was growing really fast, and it was the most rapidly growing, biggest employer, and the early funders wanted their money out. And the only people that were going to buy it were from on the East and West Coast, and it was going to leave the area completely. The partial owner, who was going to get a big payout if that happened, wanted to stay in town. He wanted the business to stay in town. He was one of the leading philanthropists in town. He was rebuilding the downtown area, and he did not have enough funds to keep it in town. So he came to all the people in town that had enough money to do it. Nobody wanted to do it. Last place, came to Gunderson, met with me and my senior vice president of business. And to shorten the story up, after strong, strong due diligence, we took 25% of the organization's savings, 25% that we'd spent 100 years saving, and invested in this company to keep it in town. Now, we didn't do it on a whim and a prayer. We did due diligence. We got an outside consultant. We had a lot of financial people. We had a little, we looked at it really hard. We demanded two of the five seats on the board. So it wasn't guessing, but it was a risk. And if it went poorly, I'm sure I'd have lost my job. Gunderson would have been hurt, all those things. But the chances of that happening were so small. We said it was the right thing. We convinced our board that there was the right thing to do. We took 25% of our savings, invested in this company, saved the company, kept it in town, made the buyers, the new buyers that we eventually sold it to, promise to grow the company. They've now increased it 250% since we did that a few years ago. It has grown. It has stayed in town. It's a major economic boon for the community. So this is what I'm talking about, living our values and inspiring your community. When people figured out what Gunderson had done, when we had taken that risk for the good of the community, it resulted in a lot of partners showing up at our door saying, we would be happy to work with you on this project, not necessarily one that would make money, but projects to improve the health and well-being of the community. So who in the midst of that would take the beating if it went poorly? Well, me and the other senior leaders. Who would benefit? The whole breadth of the community. Having good jobs for the breadth of the community was a very important thing. Now, that person's gone on to build an art center with the university as a co-partner, renovated some more downtown, brought in another business. It has had a ripple effect to improve the health and well-being of the community.
Is that because you followed your heart in the beginning? I mean, is that, or you just knew that this was, that you had to do it, that you have to do something, that you had to step in, you had to get involved?
Well, I think the courage, when I talk about living your values, I talk about, you can't, it's nice to say it or put it on a billboard. To live it, it takes first courage to say, here's my values and here's what I'm going to do. But it takes more than that. It would have, courage would have stood up and said, let's do this. But discipline is what it took to follow through and make sure it was a good deal and make sure that it was written up in a way that that would protect the organization as much as possible and still make it happen and organize it in a way that would serve the community long term. And then the third piece, durability. So courage to start, discipline to organize it, and then durability, because there's going to be critics and there's going to be people saying you've lost your marbles and you're going off in the wrong direction, the mission of the organization is not that. So you have to have durability to put up with the criticisms and the failures. I mean, we didn't fail at that, but we certainly failed at other things. So to live your values, it takes all of those things, and I try and build a case in the book that ordinary people can rise up and live their values with courage, discipline, and durability. Not easy, not necessarily convenient, but boy, you find partners pretty quickly. People respect that you're sticking with your values, and we ended up accomplishing a great deal for the well-being of the community.
I'm looking at your bio, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, this guy's doing it. He's $1 billion of the community, thousands, hundreds of thousands of patients. I mean, are you at the point of your life where you don't stress out anymore? Or, I mean, I'm under a lot of stress when I just have something small in my life, and I have to change that. But it seems like accomplished, successful people, it seems like you have a lot on your shoulders. How do you manage some of that stress if you stress out anymore?
Well, that's a great question, because I think if you have 7,000 employees or 70 employees or 7 employees and you don't feel some stress, you're not paying attention. You should care about those employees. You should feel the pressure that you're responsible. One of the things I emphasize in the book is there's a big difference between holding people accountable and being responsible for their success. So if all you're doing is holding them accountable, you got a checklist and you're checking off whether they turn left or right when they're supposed to, that's pretty lame leadership. Being responsible for their success, that's much different. And that's a lot of pressure. And then if you take $1 billion of the community money, it's not my money, we had $1 billion in revenue, that's the community's money. That's people, real people paying real dollars, affecting their lives. That's a big responsibility. So if you're not paying attention to those responsibilities, let alone in our business, it was healthcare. So it's patients' lives, children's lives, old people's lives. This is a lot of responsibility. And so you surround yourself with other good people that have great set of values. You measure hard. You know that you're not going to be perfect. You stop imagining that you're doing everything right. And you, regardless of what title you have or the fact that you have a lot of influence in the organization, you gather people, you share the responsibility, you share the successes, you have to carry the burdens. It is a lot of responsibility, but someone has to take it, and there's a lot of reward in accomplishing things. If you can decrease the mortality rate across a region, then, you know, I was close enough to the work. It's one of the things I teach young CEOs all the time, to get close enough to the work so you feel the moral imperative. So even though it feels like we're just working with statistics, but if we decrease the infection rate or the surgery complication rate or the immunization rate goes up and we save lives compared to our past or compared to others, that's people, real people, going to graduations that they wouldn't have gone to, being there for the wedding of a son or a daughter or a grandchild that they would not have made it to. These are real people that you can affect important parts of their lives. So it's worth the pressure and it's worth the burden. And now that I've handed it over, that's another thing that's very important. As a leader, you have a responsibility to hand over your organization. Too many CEOs will hold on with their bony fingers too long, or they're enthralled by the money or the power or whatever they're enthralled by. You have a responsibility for a smooth transition. You make smooth transitions when things are going well. So you don't wait till you're sick or the organization's sick. You transition when the organization's healthy, and we did that. And the momentum continued, and patients continue to be well taken care of. Staff continue to be well taken care of. The community continues to be well taken care of by the next group in the organization. So it's a responsibility. Is it a big burden? Sure, but there are ways to take care of it. You share it with other people. You try and eat well. You try and exercise well. Some people have an opportunity to be buoyed up by their faith community. There are many ways to gather strength, but sticking with your values, not going off course, is one of the key ways to being able to have the strength to get through tough times.
Absolutely. And like my grandmother says, one day at a time, Phil, one day at a time.
Indeed. Well, there's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of opportunities regardless of where you're in an organization. I think you can lead from a lot of seats. In the book, there's an example of a woman who was a Methodist church secretary, who really wasn't a very good secretary. She couldn't spell, and she couldn't write sentences very well, and she couldn't organize the church bulletin very well. But she was a fabulous leader. She organized, as pastors would come and go, she would absolutely keep that church together. She knew who was in trouble. She knew how to get them help. She was completely confidential. People would come to her with things they wouldn't tell the pastor. And she did so much good for that community. She was my mom, and probably my first lesson in leadership. You don't have to have a big fancy title. You don't have to have a big salary. She had almost no salary. But you can affect the lives of people, regardless of where you're at, by having a strong set of values and following them.
This has been fantastic. Okay. I am so happy. Give me a hug through the microphone.
All right. I'm with you. I'm a pediatrician. I'm a big hugger, so I'm all with that.
How do we find you online?
Online, the best place is go to my website. I have a website that's pretty simple. It's just jefftompsonmd.com. So jefftompsonmd.com. And then there's of course, things about the book, but there's other things that I've written and other blog posts about many different topics about leadership, both for healthcare and for other things on that site. And so it's a place to start and look around, and you can leave a message for me. I'm happy to answer messages if people have questions.
This is exactly what I needed to hear. And I know what I'm doing this weekend, and I'm excited about it. I am reading your book and living your values, because every business I'm walking into, they have the values and the mission statement. And I often think, how many people are actually living them? And I need to start looking at the values that I have put in front of my life if I'm living them. I think it's great. You're doing an amazing job.
Well, thanks. It's not just a noble thought. It's a way to succeed. You can succeed. You can build great organizations. You can compete against big competitors. You can leave a legacy, regardless of the size of your organization or your family, that you can be proud of to tell your grandchildren of. So it's not without problems, but it is a pathway that I think would be helpful for a lot of people.
Awesome. What makes you smile?
Actually, what makes me smile is people having the courage to take on hard things and succeed. I really like other people's success. I love it when people from struggling backgrounds different businesses are able to connect with each other and accomplish things for the greater good. That's what really makes me smile. And there's a lot of examples of that.
You're awesome. I'm excited about your book. I will definitely be your cheerleader over here, and I'm excited to read it. Thank you so much, Dr. Jeff Thompson. I truly appreciate the time you spent today on the Positive Phil Show.
Thanks, Phil. It's been great. It's fun talking with you, and best to you and your mom, and to the listeners, good luck, and hope you enjoy the stories.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye now.